Hi everyone, my name is Adam Small.
And I'm Jake Moses.
Welcome to our podcast, The Performer's Pathway.
A podcast adventure to help guide and navigate your musical life and career.
As a prelude to every episode, we'd like to remind our listeners that this podcast is about the other side of the musical coin. One side, which you see a lot at our website, mymusicmasterclass.com, is what to do in the practice room. The other side is how to maximize your talent and skills in the real world, and that's what this podcast is about. Also, if you have a few extra seconds to spare,
which is technically only 3 beats at 60 BPM,
please subscribe to our show at your podcast app of choice and rate us 5 stars. You can leave a comment about absolutely anything, too. That small act of kindness will really help us expand our audience and continue to create new episodes.
And lastly, word of mouth is always super helpful. So if you like what you hear, please tell the world.
All right, so Jake and I are lucky enough to be in the studio. It's a virtual studio with Bruce Foreman, who has about 1 million videos on My Music Masterclass. He also is the co-host of Guitar Wank, which is so globally successful, he must be a millionaire by now. And also, he's got about 17, I think, right, Bruce? 17 recordings as a leader?
Yeah, 18 to 19 maybe. But yeah, says, but there's only about 2 good ones.
He's also played with Ray Brown, Richie Cole. He's in a few Clint Eastwood movies, and he currently teaches at USC. He's a California guy at this moment. And we're so happy to have him here, and if you haven't checked out Guitar Wank, by the way, it's super badass and really funny and informative. Anyway, how you doing, Bruce?
Doing great so far. You're going to be gentle with me, right?
Oh, man.
No, of course not. Of course
we're
not.
Always, we're always gentle, right?
Yeah, right.
We know
each
other.
Yeah.
So, you know, typically with this podcast, we ask people or we talk about things that musicians can do to help further their careers or just get together.
Uh-huh.
And I know that you have a lots of great stuff to talk about with this. Let's first talk about something that we've spoken about in private. It's not a very private thing, but you talk about cats making their own scenes. And, you know, I'm just kind of going to springboard you off on that one.
Yeah, well, that's always been a big thing for me, and when I watch people who I feel are successful, I think that that's a real big part of it. You got to make your own scene. I mean, the key to this is just being badass. And the way you become badass is by playing a lot, especially with great players, and trying things and learning by doing. And so creating a scene can just be having sessions a lot, can be make going out to other people's gigs, can be finding a gig on your own and getting lots of different people to play with you, but really putting an energy together to A, be part of a community, but also B, create a community. And I think some of the assets we have to great playing, like YouTube and home studios and things, which have created great music and have been amazing innovations in music, I think because of the lack of the personal interaction and the actual being out in the world while doing it interaction has created a strange kind of musician in music. And I think that that is something that I would like to see sort of shift in its concept.
Actually, on that subject, I kind of have, because my hometown, we have a music school, right? It's not a music school, it's a university, has a small program. And when I go back, nobody's out there playing. It's usually the same artists that I was playing with when I was there. But what would you say to a student that's maybe scared to go to a club and or a bar or even a restaurant and kind of like make a night of music there? Like, how do you...
You mean talk to the owner and stuff?
Yeah, like how to book something like that, because they know musicians, they're all practicing, they're all learning, but they're not playing out. So it's sort of a stale kind of thing. It's like they're just in practice rooms, not playing, you know, but I think it's because of fear. Like they don't know how to approach that situation. Do they need demo recordings? Do they need video?
I think it's obviously different. It's individual for every, I mean, if you're a drummer, it's different than if you're a guitar player. If you're a guitar player, you can easily go to some restaurant and say, hey, man, it's a great restaurant. Why don't you let me play here? You know, I'll do it once or twice for free. You can just feed me just to see if you like it. See, and you know, and then do some work and get your like friends to come hear you, and then maybe have somebody sit in with you at the end of the night as the restaurant starts to get a little less crowded. Okay. Next thing you know, the guy sees people in his place and he likes the vibe of it and you're playing. But also, I mean, can you hang?
Yeah.
Can you actually, I mean, yeah, sure, you burn Autumn Leaves or something, you know, and you've got three great solos, but how are you for 3 hours?
Yeah.
And that's the thing that you're only going to get good at if you do it. You're not going to get that in the practice room. And you also need to go out and make jam sessions happen. Find some place where lots of people will come. And it's the worst possible place to play. A jam session is the worst place to play. The pressure's on you. You never have time to get a sound. Yeah. People are vibing you. You know, you're kind of cold. You're all nervous. You pull your instrument out, you know, and you've just got to make it happen and then walk away.
Well, because you're playing for musicians.
And it's just, but it is the best experience you can have. Because under that pressure and through that lens and having to get hot for 5 minutes and then walk away, these things that you learn, you just can't learn that unless you do it, because everybody ultimately finds their way of doing it through doing it. If there was one way to do it, we could have a class for it, but it doesn't work because everybody's sound is different, everybody's aesthetic is different, everybody's personality is different. So you just got to, I mean, you got to accept that if you really love this stuff, you're going to go through growing pains, and you love it enough, and it's still fun. I mean, the hang is still great. You're going to go to those jam sessions and probably make friends and meet people who are going to support you and be part of your lives and inspire you for the rest of your life.
Well, and then they're going to add to your how to get to 3 hours in that restaurant. You know what I mean? You're going to have support for that.
So, you know, everybody's got it, and really, I mean, do we have to think like it's still 1950? I mean, we got a whole new world out here with ways of letting people know we're playing. Does it have to be in a nightclub? No, it could be a pet shop, or you know, I mean, it could be a pop up anywhere. We could all just go hang now because we can get the word out through the internet and through social media. So we have these tools, but the way they're kind of being used is really to support the old school stuff. I mean, now I work in clubs, but the club owner expects me to bring all the people.
Yep.
In the old days, I played there and the club owner would bring the people.
Yeah.
You know, now it's like my job to support him to put his kids through college.
Yeah.
You know, it's real estate. I'm just renting the room now. Well, pretty I can much. Rent any room and have more control over it. So for people to start thinking of music as like, do they have something to say? Are there people that want to hear it? What's the best way to get it out there? Take it to them. I mean, I just really am not seeing enough entrepreneurial spirit for people who are supposedly the most creative musicians on, you know, creative people on earth. There ain't a whole lot of creativity when it goes into just thinking about how to present the music to an audience.
Actually, in the jazz realm, do you see house concerts at all? Because that's become a thing. Finally, the singer-songwriter community has been like, I don't want to go to house concerts.
House concerts, I do quite a bit of them.
Good, because that's
personally,
like the,
yeah, you know, because I've been doing smaller group things, either solo or duo, which that is really the way it goes. I mean, if you have a sextet and that's the way your band is, then house concerts really probably aren't going to work out too well for you.
Yeah,
it depends how big the house is.
Yeah,
that's a mansion party.
Right, yeah, yeah, you know, but you know. Really, you've got to start thinking about what's the music you're presenting, what, you know, and all these things go into it. Yes, house concerts, if you have a project that's intimate, that's a great idea. And that's one of a million possible entrepreneurial things that could happen.
No, I like that idea.
You know, so, I mean, I just really think that people need to start being honest with themselves about what they're doing, what they want to do, how they want to present it. Who's really their demographic to get it to? And then, you know, build a new paradigm for how to get that out to the world. I mean, with all the tools we have, what's, you know, I mean, think of, look at the masterclass videos. Now somebody can just take a lesson. The one night they're sitting around the house, they go, God, you know, I'd kind of like to take a lesson with Bruce. They don't have to fly to Los Angeles or New York or wherever I am. They can go on my music masterclass and just, you know, and even if they watch, so for like $10, they just want to watch it and they get one thing out of it. Yep. And they play it. That's like, that's gold. And they can be in the outback of Australia or in Siberia somewhere. This is like, this is something that never could have happened all those years ago. And we need to start thinking of presenting our music to the world in this new world, but with being realistic about who wants to hear it and how we want to present it.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in that order, but, you know.
It's funny because, you know, it seems like the musicians finally caught up to the distribution thing, but what you're talking about makes a lot of sense. It's true. The whole live performance thing hasn't really been rethunk.
Right, and right now that is the where the monetization lies. In the old days, you toured to support a record. Mm-hmm. Now a record is just something you use to get gigs. I mean, it's completely the opposite now.
I'm with you.
In my lifetime, it has changed, and so yeah, you need to put out music so that people can, especially if you're not a veteran player who everybody already knows and trusts. Then you need to get your word out, you know, get your sound out to the world. And you need mm-hmm. to also really think about what it is you want to say and what the best place to say it is. And it's going to take some entrepreneurial thinking, but that's asked of you every time you do a gig. Now you got to promote it on Facebook or promote it on Instagram or whatever, tweet it about it, you know, and you got to let all your people know you're there, and you got to print postcards or whatever you do, you know, hire a smoke writer in the sky. You know, I mean, whatever you do, we have to do that now. And that's been thrown on us. So it's time for us to just, well, take it by the reins. You know, it's like, if we're in the real estate game, would you rather be a tenant or a landlord?
Yeah, for sure.
You know, you got to make a decision. And if you decide you're going to be a landlord, then you got to go out there and like be ground zero guy who puts his neck out and makes something happen.
I like the real estate thing because I'm actually thinking like your shows, you seem to pick places that are going to give an atmosphere that is with the music. It's on par with the music. You uh-huh. know, if you're doing your red guitar thing, it's not going to be in some crazy loud bar or something. You know what I mean? Like, you know, when you do your cowbop thing, it's kind of like, it makes sense in the atmosphere.
Right.
I like that you're thinking about that.
And it can work all these different ways, but yes, I'm very careful about that. And really, when you think about it, we aren't in the music business. We're in the real estate business.
I like
because
that.
When it comes down to it, we're renting space in a club.
Yeah.
Whether you're giving half the door to the club, whether you're selling drinks and food at a club, basically they're renting you space. And they're expecting you to bring all the people. Well, if that's the case, then why don't we just like rent the space we want at the price yeah. we want, and we'll bring all the people, and we'll make off of the profit. If
yeah.
that's the way it's going to be now, fine. One thing, if your club has a, you know, has a weekly advertisement in the newspaper, or they know the people at the radio station and they actually get you yeah. interviews, or they, you know what I mean? Or they have a mailing list of yeah. thousands of people that they send your gig out to. Okay, if you're going to do that, then it's a whole different thing. It's not really real estate, it's a partnership.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, the way we play now, it's the real estate business, and we are the tenants.
Yeah, that's very rare. I mean, I went to Melbourne, Australia, and mm-hmm. it was with an artist that is not like famous. She's well known in some circles, but they booked us there for 6 nights, 2 shows a night, and the room was packed every night, because it's like, we have a music dinner club and we have, like, you know, members,
right?
But we know and we're confident that people are going to come because they know that we have good music,
right? And curate it.
That's
yeah.
so rare. Like, that blew my mind.
But that's a whole different thing. Then they yeah. give you a guarantee, and exactly. that's a different realization, a reality that most musicians aren't working with anymore yeah. unless you hit a certain tier.
Yep.
Going with this whole, you know, making your own thing happen, you know, for those of you who don't know, Jake mentioned it, Bruce has got this amazing show called The Red Guitar, and it's great. It's a one-man show, but him on guitar, playing and talking, and it's just super cool. I know that he's had musicians with him at some times too. It's not always a one-man show, but it's this really cool kind of performance art meets music thing that I've checked out and I think is great. And it's creative in a way that it's framing jazz in this different way, and it offers a different entertainment value as well. What was your thinking in creating this, or was it just a passion project or fun or what?
You know, I mean, just like everything, the genesis of it, you know, comes back to just experience. And I don't know, I have this kind of thing I think about when we create things, like we use our hand, which has, you know, four fingers and a thumb. And I think the things that we use to create, even musically, we have our background and our perspective and our aesthetic and our skill set and our resources. So if you honestly look at what you have to work with, and then situations just happen. Like with me, I got this red guitar, and about a week after I started playing it, after I'd done this big gig, the day after it was like 12 guitar players on the stand. It was one of those shows, and I'm walking down the street of this town. Two guys were in front of me, and one guy says to the other, "Did you hear that guy last night?" And the guy said, "Which one?" He said, "Oh, the one with the red guitar." And right away, the words, the red guitar, just sort of hit me. Like, wow, right, the red guitar. And then I thought of the red shoes, and I thought of the red violin, and then and how those stories are so impactful to me, and how, like, we as guitar players or as musicians, inanimate objects sort of take over our lives. They possess us. And so... And being a writer, a person who's written novels, and a person who likes to do comedy and stuff and tell stories, I got called a week later to be commissioned. You know, this new performing arts center was looking for original works for their first year. And the guy said, "Look, we want original stuff, but like a night of Gershwin or a night of a tribute to Wes Montgomery isn't going to work." So I said, "Well, I got this idea." He said, "What?" I said, "It's called The Red Guitar." He says, "What's that?" Well, I tell the story. I play my guitar and I tell a story about what it's like to live a life in music and how being consumed or possessed by an inanimate object like the guitar changes your world and what that's like and what that's like to have done that for 40 years. And the guy went, "Whoa, you know, that's really cool." And because, like, I have the ability to talk and play. I mean, I can play at any, you know, I could be playing any gig, anytime, and hold a conversation with somebody. It's just, it's a skill probably I developed playing in bars.
Which we've seen a lot, you know, and a lot of times on your masterclass videos, you're doing the same thing. I mean, you can do the entire thing with playing.
Yeah, and so... I figured that's a skill I have. I have a skill of writing. I have this idea, and I like doing things that, I mean, I had mentors that were very adamant about me doing new things, but that jazz was not just go and play licks over changes, or just because Train did this, we do this, or Bird did this, we do this. Everybody's got to bring their own thing to the game, or this music will become just a institutionalized, you know, thing you hang on the wall,
It's academic,
like an art museum. It's not meant to be that. It's meant to be alive, and so you put all that stuff together. Like I say, my perspective and my background and my aesthetic and my skill set and resources, it became something I really found fun to do and challenging. And it's I'm doing it on my own, so I can always change it if I get a different idea while I'm doing it. And it's dangerous, and it's all those, and it demands like focus and being alive. It's, you know, like imagine bombing on a comedy stage. That's probably about the most alive you can be.
Yeah.
And being up there on the red guitar is really fucking dangerous. So it's really alive, totally. And I have to make it happen. And to me, that is the essence of jazz. And that's not it to me. I mean, if you read what Herbie Hancock and Wayne Shorter say, who I think are the greatest statesmen of our music today, that's what they say. I mean, I'm not going to put words in their mouth, but I've read their books and I've read their, you know, I've heard their speeches, and this is what they're preaching to the world. This is what jazz means to them. And so the red guitar and my band Cowbop and my band Junkyard Dude. That's what jazz means to me. It's like, yes, I mean, I play bebop as well as anybody on the guitar, I think, you know, out there. But that's not, that's just where I come from. That's not who I am, and that's not where I'm going. That's just my original perspective, and that's the music that I love the most.
Yeah, and that brings me to kind of the next point, which is, again, we've talked about some of this stuff off, well, I was going to say off camera, but they're, you know, yeah. this is an audio only venue.
Thank God, because I'm not wearing any clothes. I do have an athletic supporter, but he's just cheering me on right now.
My point being is that you're entertaining to watch, you know, and Cowbop is one of those bands as well. Again, if you haven't seen Cowbop and you're in the LA area or wherever Cowbop can be found, it's a great fun night, you know, and that's kind of the point. It's fun. It's not stiff. It's not this museum piece. It's not jazz in a way where the artist on stage is saying, well, this is what I'm into, and the audience is just going to have to understand it.
Yeah.
And it's no matter what I do, it's not that at all. It's entertaining and fun and palatable for people that might not even be jazz fans, in quotes.
Right. But
how do you feel about the performance thing? I know we've talked about it so much, but just talk about that.
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, I think everybody should do what they believe in. That's the real key here. And if I happen to be kind of a guy who likes to joke around, while I take the music as seriously as anybody I know and will put my integrity and my seriousness up against anybody I know, I don't take myself seriously. And I don't see it as a personally as a as any sort of a paradox that I can sit there and joke around while I'm playing and be entertaining and still take the music very seriously. To a lot of people, that's not doable or that's not okay. And if they feel that way, I wholly support them doing what they want to do. I think that's what they should do. That's the beauty of this music. That's, like I say, what I was trained. Be yourself. Believe in yourself. For me personally, you have to understand, I came up playing with Richie Cole and Eddie Jefferson, Dizzy Gillespie, Bobby Hutcherson, Freddie Hubbard. These guys could have been, you know, the next Louis Armstrongs. I mean, they were entertaining. They were brilliant musicians. I don't need to tell you that. I mean, everybody knows that. They were so entertaining, and they really taught me how to read a room and to how to be natural on the stage. And they also showed me that you don't have to be pissed off and treat the audience as your enemy or act like it's classical music where, you know, there's this wall between us and just dig my shit. And so that is my worldview. That is not, I'm not suggesting it needs to be everybody's worldview, but when you see my projects, you will definitely see somebody who really wants to communicate with the audience and wants to entertain them and doesn't see any compromise in my doing so. You know, I find music that I feel 100% invested in that works in that moment. And I think that's a big part of the jazz thing to me, is just knowing what's working in the moment and living in that moment and saving, maybe, you know, I had this great tune that I wanted to play today, but saving it for tomorrow because today it just doesn't really fit with what's going on around me. And that's improvisation too, I think. So, and being aware in the world, just like, you know, guys who never look up from their fretboard, you know, I mean, the guitar players who just stare at their hands. I mean, I've been playing the guitar for over 50 years. Oh, man. Should be a lot better than I am. Anyways, nothing has moved in 50 years. The fretboard is still the same configuration as it's always been. Now, yeah, I might need to look down to make sure I'm going to hit a G as the first note or whatever, you know, but usually I don't have to even do that. But sometimes I want to be careful. But past that, do I really have to stare at my hands? No. I know one thing. The more I look at my hands, the more I only hear myself. Because your eyes follow your ear. Your ears follow your eyes. So if you look around, you start to hear the other players. You start to hear the sound of the room. You start to notice the energy in the room. All these things are there for you to perceive through your eyes. And if you stare at your neck, you're cutting the world. You're not allowing the world in. Now, some players are so beautiful and so thoughtful and so soulful that they can pull you into that world. But that's a rare person. I've seen numerous ones that do it, but that's by far from the rule. You know what I mean? And yeah, I would suggest it to everybody to, even if you are one of those people who's real tentative and afraid and shy, you know, to engage the rest of the world just because their energy can add something to your music, whether it's the other players, whether it's the actual surroundings you're in, or whether it's the audience. These are all parts of that momentary experience which we supposedly are invested in the jazz ethos. So that's my opinion about it. You know, but again, whatever works for you, do it. You know, I'm not here to preach. I'm here to just give my perspective. You know, I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying this is what I believe.
You actually answered a lot of questions, because the question I had is, do you think being someone that the audience is just drawn to, do you think that's a talent that can't be taught? Or do you think it sounds like there are some things you can at least pay attention to, like don't look at your fretboard? Like, because to me, when I see a show, the ones I love seeing is when you're just all of a sudden, I love what this person's doing. And you understand right away that what they're doing is a craft. And it's because of the delivery. For some reason, like when you play the guitar, I'm just staring and listening. I'm like, wow, like you're giving me your craft in that moment. So I think, I think it's
thank you.
Yeah. But I think from what you just said, that's not something that's only a talent. Like, you can actually work.
Jake, we're not supposed to be this nice to Bruce. Here.
No, but no, because I've always wondered that. Is that a talent, or can you learn to do that better?
I think there are people who just, like, you know, like when you watch a movie or a theater, they walk on the stage and they're like a bit part, you know, like they're not even supporting. They're just kind of an extra.
They're just there, yeah.
And you just can't take your eyes off them. There are people who are like that. And those people are kind of born. But beyond that, yes, I think you can develop. I think a lot of it's your own awareness.
Yeah.
First of it's your own awareness. And your second is your own ownership of yourself. How invested are you? I believe in this. Really, I believe in this. And I am going to die on this sword for you if it doesn't come out right. You know that. You're going to watch me bleed, and I'm going to keep bleeding until I get it right. And, you know, and so I think people feel that.
I like that.
I mean, if you're up there practicing, they know that. And they go, God, this guy plays the shit out of that instrument. That's what they're going to know. And if that's what you're out there to say to the world, great. You can prove that in about 20 seconds, though.
I like that, because that goes past like the simplicity of confidence. Because everyone's like, oh, just be confident. It's like, what does that
no,
mean?
No, it's ownership.
Yeah.
But in order to learn it, I believe, and this I learned from horses. From being a cowboy, you have to be, you know, if you don't have it, you have to fake it till you got it.
Mm.
And because a horse can kill your ass.
Yeah.
Horses are the most intuitive beings, but they're kind of dumb. I mean, they don't have the thinking power, and they're prey animals, so they're afraid of everything.
Yep.
So if you walk up to this horse and you're going to get on its back, and it probably smells that you're a meat eater.
Yep.
And you're going to get right on the part of its body that, like a wolf or a lion, if it were, you know, whatever prey, would take it down.
Yeah.
That's where you are.
Yep.
They can't see you. They can kind of peripherally see you. So you're walking up to them, and you're going to get on them and tell them what to do. And everything in nature is telling them, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
And so, and any person that doesn't realize that even the nicest horse can kill the best rider, you just got to walk up to them and be confident so that they're comfortable.
Yep.
So that when you get on them and you ask them to do things, they think, well, this guy's got it together. I'm just going to go with him. Everything in me is telling me to run the fuck out of here, but I'm going to stay here because he says to stay.
Yeah.
And I realize, you know, you get on a horse and you've seen it buck three people off, and you get on. You know, you got to get on like, no, I'm going to ride, you know, we're going to be cool. And then the horse is cool. And And I did learn a lot about getting on the bandstand. And, you know, you're thinking to yourself, man, there's so much shit can go wrong here. Am I really prepared to be in this high-pressured situation where people paid all this money and there's all these people, I'm talking about really high-powered, you know, big, big concerts or playing with great players. And, you know, you just got to get up there and know, I got this, I got this, I got this. And then, you know, it gets going and you do got it. You know, it's just the natural, it's a very short transition from I'm faking, I got it. Well, I'm cool. Everything's cool. It's working. Now I got it. Now, you know, and every second you stay on from then on there, it's creating confidence for the rest of your life that you bring up to the next situation and the next situation and the next situation. And that's really the way we have to grow and make this happen. And for instance, nerves. We think of nervousness as something really bad. And in general, I experience it, especially like when I'm in workshops and guys come up and sit in with me.
Yep.
Or it's even better when I'm doing workshops with other people and I get to watch, I get to observe rather than be part of it.
Yep.
Because I was doing this one with Peter Bernstein, and this kid went up to sit in with him. And of course, they played Stella. Everybody plays Stella at those things. And this kid was so nervous that he just shut out the world.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't hear one note Peter played. You know, if Peter had decided to like change to another song in the middle, he wouldn't have noticed. And I'm thinking to myself, his nervousness, which I'm sure he thought of it as bad. His reaction to that was, of course, the exact wrong reaction. Yeah. Really, nervousness is just energy.
Yeah.
Nervousness is good. It says to the world, it says to ourselves, we care. We want it to be good. I mean, I don't want to play with somebody who gets on the stage and doesn't have any trepidation, because this music shit,
it's not easy.
There's a lot of magic in there. Yeah. You know what I mean? You just got to believe that it's all going to work out. You got to have this sort of, you can't possibly train for everything that's going to happen. No. You just got to deal with it. And you got to feel like you're in battle with great guys who are, you know, great players who are going to have your back, and we're going to make it work no matter what, you know.
Hey, what's that military thing? Improvise, adapt, and overcome, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, because when you get there, nervousness has hit you. We're full of energy. So rather than channeling that energy into, I've got it and I'm just going to do what I got to do, and you white knuckle everything and, you know, screw up your sound and your time, just like breathe, channel, let people help you, you know, take that energy into the center of the group instead of over into yourself. Nervousness isn't bad. It's energy. And then when we put a bad connotation on it and we feel nervous and then we feel bad about ourselves, then it just is cascading.
Yeah.
This cascading negative effect that we could have stopped right at the beginning just by breathing and giving up to the music.
It's misused.
Yeah. And so I know that's a fucking really long answer to a question, but.
No, I mean, moving on to, well, something that's related. Let's say you're talking to one of your students and they're explaining that they have some problems on stage because they're at a jam session and they're getting vibed by other musicians, or they just feel vibed. Mm-hmm. You're a little more experienced now, or a lot more experienced. And I know as you get older, you get thicker skin or whatever you want to call it. But what's your advice?
Well, you were really hit on it so well, because first of all, there is real vibing going on probably, but also on the other side, you're perceiving it because we are all so damn insecure. And that's also, I think, a good thing, because, we need humility and we need to know, we need things that make us work harder, and those insecurities and stuff do actually help us stay dedicated and motivated. But in the case of people vibing you, they're being assholes. I mean, first of all, you know, I mean, really, are you going to be at a jam session with Bill Evans? Are you going to be at a jam session with John Coltrane? Or if we're going for live people, are you going to go, you know, you're going to be at a jam session with Chris Potter, you know, or any of those guys? No, you're playing a local jam session with some guys. Chances are it's the young ones that vibe you. The older guys are really glad you're here to play and
keeping the art alive.
Yeah, right. So, you know, naturally you want to gravitate to the older guys. They have more to teach you anyways. But just, hey, they're vibing you. So what? You know, they're assholes. And why are they vibing you? To feel better about themselves? There's some guy playing at a jam session where no one's listening to. You know, oh, they're the king of that domain? That's sort of like being, you know, the best, you know, third grader in the world. You know what I mean? It's like, really, what? I mean, they really got something to be vibing about. You know, and it's good. And they're kind of
competitive. People become more protective over their scenes when they're smaller, you know?
Right. And also, being competition is good, too. It's, I mean, I don't believe in this participation medal shit. You know, I mean, come on, bring it and, you know, and go away licking your wounds and let it help you get better. Learn from what you did and didn't do and get better and come back and take a piece out of their ass the next time you see them. You know,
I agree with you 100%.
That's great. I mean, come on, grow up. This is the world. You're competing against those people for gigs. And it's good to know. And if they're vibing you, maybe they're trying to keep you from stealing their gig. They want to, like musical warfare isn't enough. They need to use psychological warfare too. Well, you know, then you can right away kind of laugh about that. But it's always better just to be a badass. If you're a badass, everybody's going to want to play with you. Everybody's going to want you to play with them. You got to decide what being a badass means and become that person and own it and boom, you know. And also, don't just think about the details. Think about the big picture. Listen to solos that you really love and not just the licks and the notes and the scales or whatever is inside it, but listen to the shape of it. Listen to why it really moves you. Does this guy take an idea and build it up? Is it a stream of consciousness sort of thing? Are there like climax, a lot of little climaxes? Or is there one big, huge climax? You know, I mean, what's the use of blues idiom in it? What's the use of simplicity versus complexity? You know, get inside the music for really the way it makes people feel, because you want to get the house, you move people at a deeper level. You get a few jazz musicians to probably kind of applaud if you play a bunch of amazing shit. If you really make a musical statement, you get the house to love you.
Transcends.
And really, are we here to play good or are we here to tell stories? I'm here to tell stories, you know, and I'm just, to me personally, playing good is what I spend my day doing. You know, I get better and better. Why? So I can tell better stories. So that's my motivation to get better as a player, is not to prove that I'm a better player to the world, but to be able to communicate my stories to the world in a more eloquent fashion.
No, that's a great point.
But not everybody's like that. You know, if you're one of those guys that just wants to be the best and, you know, kick everybody's ass, well, you know, you'll probably get there, and then 2 weeks later, some young guy's going to come and just kick your ass too. So I don't know. I'm just suggesting, and I think that the music is really devoid of a lot of great storytelling right now. And I mean, mm-hmm. my red guitar has kind of taken it to a whole different place, because now I'm not leaving it to the beauty of music, of magic of music storytelling, which is, you know, that sort of ethereal, like, I could be playing a song about my mom dying and you could be, you know, laughing about it, thinking it's, you know, like a soccer game of, you know, I want to, you know, whatever politically incorrect group against another politically incorrect group.
I love that connection with music, though.
You know,
I love that it can be something so different.
You know,
listening.
I mean, it's which is the beauty of music. Yeah. I wanted to tell my story of the red guitar in a more literal way. So I chose words. And I use mm-hmm. music to support that. And yet I feature the playing in it so much. So it's kind of a weird, strange new media or medium that I'm creating. And that's just because I was frustrated with storytelling. You know, it was feeling like I was just doing it in the music magic world. And I wanted to see if I could take it further in a different way. So... But really, that's you know, and I guess as you get older, you know what I mean, and you fought a lot of fights, you gain wisdom, but you also gain a lot of surrender and humility because you've had your ass kicked so fucking much.
Yeah. Okay, so one last question for you, Bruce. You know, you've been teaching at USC for a bit. You've taught previously for quite some time, and I know that there's some super, super talented and successful players that have studied under you. What is some general advice for younger players or players trying to break into the scene that maybe we haven't touched on, stuff that maybe you see with the current crop of kids or students that you have?
You know, USC is an interesting place. I've been there 14 years now, and people are going there to learn to play, but they're also going there to get degrees to teach. You know, so I'm dealing with a lot of different people with different motivations and different plans for their future. Objectives, I guess, is the best word for that. And I'm not a Methodist. You know, the teacher who, like, first lesson we do this, the second lesson we do this, the third lesson we do that, and that's just what we do. I try to be a holistic teacher, and I listen. I mean, our first session is more like a psychology session than a music session.
Oh, everybody needs psychology.
I mean, well, we talk about, like, what they perceive their strengths and weaknesses to be. I want to hear about their background. I want to know what our goals for the semester are going to be, what they're right now perceiving their professional place to go. You know, I mean, I really ask those questions because one guy I might be teaching might be just, of course, there, you know, he's a master's or doctoral student, is going to be teaching. He's not strong in jazz at all. And he knows damn well to have integrity and to be of value to a student who's a good jazz player. He knows to know enough about jazz to be able to guide this kid, even though the kid will probably mop the floor up with him playing-wise in the first year. So that's one guy I teach. Awesome. And then I got another kid who's like, you know, playing like a god. I mean, if he wants to be the next guy, he's got it. It's just whether he wants to do that or not. And so I have these various people, and so I can't give general things, but I do try to push the kids who have that amazing talent, the outliers, as I call them. And like right now, I it's a rare time because I think I have like four of them, you know, out of 15 students that are those kind of outlier players that could easily emerge as the next Rosenwinkel, Pat Metheny, you know, trend-setting guy. They're that good already in their late teens or early 20s.
It's crazy.
And with them, I just try to encourage them to be aware of the fact that they're in school, and yeah, they want to get their degree, but the real world needs, they need the real world, and the real world needs them. And if they don't want to do it, it's okay too. You know, if they want to just stay in school and get an advanced degree and teach and just kind of be a great player, that's going to be fine for them. They're going to be cool. But they've really got this thing worked out, and I try to encourage them to really interface more with the outside world than the other guys who I try to encourage maybe to be more professional and just get and learn the basics so that they're ready to join that elite level. And then the guys who I know who really don't have an interest in what I'm, you know, like as being a jazz player, they're just seeing jazz as a great educational component to their professional life later. Then I really work with them on historical elements and stylistic elements and understanding how it works, you know, things that I would never probably even do with the next Kurt Rosenwinkel, you know. Well, we do talk about history and styles, not in the same way, because these kids already know a lot of that, you know, and can intuit it real quickly.
Yeah, so, you're catering your message.
Yeah, and it makes teaching for me sort of like the same creative, rewarding experience as playing a gig. Because I go in there and it's like, today we have it just like with the master classes I do with you. I go in, mm-hmm. we talk about a subject, and I really think like I'm making this understandable for people. Something that's so inherently, or it seems on its face value to be so difficult and complex. And I'm not saying it isn't. I'm saying, but the entry point into it is really not that. I have this kind of feeling everything's simple. It's just not easy. And I'm trying to just cut the bullshit out, demystify it for them so that they can really get in there and get the most maximum productivity out of what they get. Because I came up in the exact opposite world. I started when jazz education was just starting. I mean, Jerry Coker had just kind of written that first book, Improvising Jazz. You know, I mean, was like, but when I went to a gig, if I went to a guy and I said, man, what was that chord? You know, what was that voicing you played on this? Or what changes are you using? And they look at me like, they look like, hey, didn't you hear it when I played it? You know, figure it out yourself. I had to figure it out. I mean, it was like not cool to talk about it.
Yeah.
There was a sort of a, if you want to be part of this, you got to figure it out just like I did.
Yep.
And
absolutely.
And I was the kind of part of the first generation that went, no, we want to help people learn this. You know, it's just like, we love this so much. What a great way to spend the day sitting there and maybe making a little money talking about this music and figuring out how it goes. And I don't need to tell you, you want to learn to do something, try teaching it. That's the best way to learn it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to sort
it out. So, I mean, there's a little bit of, besides making the money here, that is selfish. You know, I mean, it forces me to understand it at a deeper level because I have to explain it to somebody. So, I would just suggest, I mean, YouTube is so great and home studios are so great and all this technology is so great, but it does take time and it does keep you ultimately from playing with players. And right now, there are those of us alive in our later years who have a lot to offer you. And if you're in front of your computer screen 10 years from now, 20 years from now, most of us are going to be dead. And you won't have played with us, and you won't have talked to us, and you won't have gotten any of the advantage of us. I mean, I can't tell you, not a week goes by that some mentor of mine or some person I knew who I really was heavily influenced by checks out, you know? And I try to think of what my life would be like without those people. And I just want to remind all of you people who are playing this music, which I assume is pretty much everybody who's listening to this podcast, you are in a family now.
Yeah.
And don't just like go to a family reunion once every 10 years and think you're part of the family. You got to go out and the older people, they have a lot to offer you and a lot to share and a lot to teach you, and go get it. They want to give it to you. They're older. They've got lives. You need to go get it. I mean, that's the way I was. I was the guy that you had to tell me to leave. You had to ask me to leave. You had to ask me to go away, you know,
because
if you played great, I wanted to know everything you did. I wanted to know what you ate. I wanted to know, you know, everybody in jazz at that time had their own language, their way of speaking, not just playing, you know, and I wanted to be immersed in that. And I'm losing my family now. You know, I'm at that time of life where I've lost almost most of it, you know, and I just want to point out to the younger players that YouTube is great, but it's not the same. The ones that are still alive, go hang out with them. Even though they're not maybe playing as good as they were when they were young, you can still watch their YouTube. But, you know, and through that, you will find where your place in the music and your place in life is. And probably you will create a network and a business out of it. Probably. And one last thing, I'm going to rant here because I
do it.
I got called for a gig. This was about a year ago or 6 months ago, and I was doing a workshop at University of Northern Colorado right before I played a gig that night. And a guy called me, and he's a producer of records and a real drag. He called me to do a gig because we fell out, so he wasn't calling me anymore. But obviously, somebody canceled at the last minute. He needed a good guitar player, so he was going to bury the hatchet for this moment and call me for a gig. And I gratefully couldn't do it. And I said, I can't do it. And, you know, being the person I am, I just said, how you doing? You know, just asked out of kindness, you know. Even though he's a person I don't really like or appreciate, I still asked how he was doing, just being a human on the earth here. And he like went into this whole rant about, I'm not recording live musicians anymore. I'm just taking, you know, archive you know, dead guys, you know, like outtakes and live bootlegs.
And just trying to reboot them.
And I'm making records out of that, you know, and that's where the money is. You know, and I just, I didn't even have time, and nor I knew that what would be the point of me telling him off again. Yeah. You know, it would be the same thing that caused our problem in the first place. I said, well, good luck, George. Bye. Oh, I said his name. Anyways. and I went to that workshop, and the first thing I said to those kids is, I got something that's really bothering me that I have to tell you about. And I told them about that conversation and about how we don't need an outtake of Train anymore. We don't need another Wes Montgomery record. These guys didn't want that shit to come out in the first place for whatever reason it was. Let's respect that. Meanwhile, if you're a guitar player and you put a record out the same week that they drop like some bootleg tape of Wes Montgomery, you're never going to sell your record because all the guitar players are going to buy more Wes.
Yeah, exactly.
And we got to stand up and say, hey, no, this new guy is saying something new. We got enough Wes Montgomery already. We know how great he is, you know, and maybe if it's there for free, we'll check it out. But don't take your money and give it to that. Give it to some young person who's alive, who's going to create great music, who's going to actually take that money and spend it somewhere and create a world we need to live in. Come on, everybody, support each other. Let's not just feed some sick necrophilia kind of concept, you know?
Well, I mean, the entire concept of immortality. I mean, it's immortality. Like, you don't need to feed it anymore. That's the whole point of it.
Yeah, right.
Like, it did its job.
Well, no,
it
but they're making money on it. It's like you're eating a cadaver.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, man. I'm the first guy. More Train. I want to hear it, you know? But I mean, God, you know how much Train I've heard in my life, you know? And I never got to hear him live, unfortunately. But damn, I mean, there's all these young people making great music. That's who I should be paying my money for. And we should all be supporting each other. And if we ain't going to do it, nobody is. And I know but that is also something I'm telling my young kids. And I guess that, so it does have something to do with your original question, which is like, make, you know, treat it like it's your community, treat it like it's your family. If we all work together and support each other, but be honest. You know, don't support stuff you don't like. Don't go giving money to somebody just because he's your friend at school. Make him earn it, you know, because you're not doing any favors. And like I treat all my kids, I said, come to my gigs, treat it like it's a recital. I have to sit in the room and judge your ass when you're playing. So come to my gig and judge me. And I want to hear it.
Yeah.
You know, harsh as, you know, I'm okay with that, you know. and this, but because through doing this, we're going to all be critical thinkers. We're going to develop our own person. Because really, where did I develop my thing? It came from taking the best of the people I liked and avoiding the worst from the people I didn't.
Yeah.
That's how I developed. I tried to develop my thing, you know, and without that vital information, how could I have even done it in the first place?
I'm with you, man. Bruce, that was as good as always. And, you know, Bruce can talk. And if you liked what you heard, you know, this guy has 9 videos with us.
Yes.
9 videos. That's 9. And if you didn't like what you heard, you can buy them all and give them to someone you don't like.
Exactly. Piss off your parents.
Exactly. It works both ways. Although they're amazing. And he's, you know, just really well spoken, and I'm talking about him, and like he's not here. Bruce, you're really well spoken. You said it right, man.
Well, I like to say to all my students, take my advice. I'm not using it.
Man, it's so great to have you on, and you know, if you haven't checked it out, Guitar Wank is really great, informative. It's Bruce and Scott Henderson, 2 amazing guitarists. Talking about guitar stuff, you know, drinking some wine, right? Hanging out.
Yeah, and we're doing all that.
and it's funny, but it's also real. And, you know, I My Music Masterclass, we support them heavily, and we hope you guys all do too. And again, thanks so much, Bruce, for being on with us. And we're going to do number 10 soon.
Yeah, we're going to do number 10 real soon, as soon as we get Jake out of jail.
Prison. What is,
prison.
Have some respect. It's prison.
Wait a minute. No. Really? Is there more cred to prison than jail?
I don't know. I hope so. It's more fun
we'll
to
get
say.
We'll get you a pardon, then it doesn't matter.
There's a whole other syllable to it, yeah, of course.
Yeah. Wait a second. So do we know what you're doing here, or are we going to run a competition to figure this one out?
Well, I'd like to do a competition for the next. I kind of want to get into the nuts and bolts again. You know, I did my first one, which was a real good overview. I felt a real good overview. And then I did a bunch of specific ones. And I want to get back into basically 251, because so many people come to me with questions about that, you know, basic thing. And I just want to present it in a way that's not as, doesn't make little droids that think modular little lick oriented phrases.
Right.
That we bring life back to 251. It's just a musical cadence, and we feel free. Like, rather than 251 being this thing that imprisons us to find vocabulary for it, to open it up and realize that, you know, the beauty inside it.
It's the Jerry Coker Patterns for Jazz book.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, right. You know, it's the anti-pattern.
Can we do this one in G flat though?
Sure, we can do any key you want.
We're gonna do G flat.
You're gonna have to transcribe it.
That's fine.
Okay.
Oh man. All right. Well, thanks again, Bruce. You're the man, and you know, I hope this wasn't too painful for you, and we'll see you next time.
It was a lot of fun, man. This is kind of similar to Guitar Wink. You know, you guys should come when we'll get you on the couch, man.
All right, man. All right. Have a good one.
See you later.
Okay, we are back. You know, that was a really cool, usually I say shoot. We didn't actually shoot any video, but episode is a long word, and there's no short word for it, right? We can't just say sewed, can we, or epi?
Epi sounds a little medical.
Yeah, it's like an EpiPen.
Yeah.
So it was a really good shoot-a-sode, and I loved what Bruce was talking about, and I know you did too. It was a lot of fun. I think one of the main messages, he had a bunch of topics, but one of the main messages was just to be a badass, right?
Yeah, I love that about him. Like, if you're going to play an instrument, then get out of your bedroom and go play it. Like,
yeah,
give it to people. You know, you have to keep art alive. You got to keep this stuff going. If people judge you, whatever, you know, but if you're being yourself, who the hell can judge you? Nobody, you know, just do it the best you can do it.
You know, and he also talks about getting out there and performing, you know, house parties, making things happen, you know, this really cool way of just, you know, not waiting for your shot, making your shot happen. You know, I thought that was a really cool point.
Yeah, that's what I love about his message. If you're in a small town, if you're in a big city, if you're in the States, if you're overseas, wherever, you can just start from where you are, get some crew together, make it happen, make your own stuff.
Yeah, and I think it's a great message. And it was a really, really cool and inspiring episode. And Bruce is a charismatic fella and a great guy. Anyway, let's log off for now, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.
Questions, comments, episode ideas, hate mail? You can get in touch with us by contact form, email, or voicemail, all of which are available at our website, theperformerspathway.com. If one of your questions or topics makes it into the podcast, with your consent, of course, you'll receive a shiny new $10 gift card for use at mymusicmasterclass.com. That's our sister website, which contains over 600 original educational videos from your musical heroes. Look forward to hearing from you.